You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
This episode of The Pet Doctor is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audiblepodcast.com/petdoctor. Over 75,000 titles to choose from for your iPod or MP3 player.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Bring a puppy home, and the first thing you hear is a lot of barking, and not necessarily from the dog. The new puppy parent starts to bark orders. Come, sit, stay. And the ever popular, no! We sound like drill sergeants. This is the way that it's always been done. But is this the best way to get through to a very impressionable youngster? How do we get a pup to learn its role in our pack and have good social manners? My guest is no stranger to Pet Life Radio. It's Sarah Wilson. She is the co-author with Brian Kilcommons of the book My Smart Puppy, the Fun, Effective, and Easy Puppy Training Book. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Hey, boy, how you doing? What am I doing? I'm creating your own life book. It's a website that's just for you. Remember that picture I took of you pulling off Lisa's bathing suit? Yeah, I know, me too. I'm putting that awesome picture on your life book page. We'll see what comments we get. And that great video we took of you standing on the table with your head inside the turkey? That's definitely going on there. No, it's easy. It only took me 2 minutes to set up your page. I chose a great theme, and I can connect with millions of other pet parents. I can also create a memorial life book. No, not for Grandma. But we can make one for Fluffy, remember her? And we can even put links to our favorite pet charity. And friends can make donations. People can create their own life book for their pets by going to PetLifeRadio.LivingYearsPets.com. Or they can sign up on the Pet Life Radio homepage. Where's Lisa? She's outside by the pool. Hey, come back here! Create your own life book for your pet. PetLifeRadio.LivingYearsPets.com.
That's it. You're madder than a junkyard dog, and you're not going to take it anymore. Your feathers are ruffled, your dander is up, and you've got a definite bone to pick. Join us each week on Pet Peeves, the show that lets you dig through the dirt and unleash your passion for pets. Your host, pet expert and award-winning author, Amy Shojai, will talk about what makes you howl and what hisses you off. Pet Peeves, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com. Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Sarah, I met you back in December in Long Beach, California at the AKC Yukonuba Dog Show, and I was so taken by you and your book. It makes such common sense. I love it.
Well, thank you for that. I really try to write for the audience because it has to be easy. In today's world, nobody has a lot of extra time, and if it seems like it's going to take a lot of extra time, then people often stop before they start. And if it isn't fun, who wants to do it? I don't want to do it. I want to train with my dog and come away laughing and feeling closer to my dog, and my dog's wagging their tail and having fun. That makes me want to do it more, and that's what I want to share with people, that this can be such a good time and be really effective.
That's wonderful. You were talking about audience and time. I know studies have been showing that the primary caregiver is going to be the woman. And with this come, sit, stay, drill master type of mentality, that doesn't seem to go along with the usual feminine mystique. It seems like you've addressed that in your book.
I certainly have. That's, in fact, what I did my master's thesis on, was why women love dogs. Because for women, men tend to have a very hierarchical type of relationship. Somebody's in charge, somebody follows. It's very comfortable for them. It's very normal for them. But women, we tend to relate across the plane. We want to be with equals. We want to support each other mutually. We want to see the other person enjoying us. And that's true for dogs. When some woman's working with the dog and they see the dog looking up at them with the mouth open and the tail wagging and their eyes sparkling, they're in. They want. That feels great to us. And
we want to feed them.
Yep. Yeah, we want to see them enjoying the whole process. And then we're in. Then we're in. And I very rarely talk to women about dominance because that's just not something that resonates with me. But I do talk a lot about safety, that by teaching your dog some very basic things, they're safer. And if you can teach them something that could save their life in 5 minutes, who wouldn't do it? Who wouldn't do it? Everyone will do it.
Definitely, because this is now a part of the family, and men and women definitely want to protect all members of the family. And the woman being that nurturing person, yes, and you got to keep those babies safe no matter they have two paws or four paws.
Exactly. One of the first things we go over in My Smart Puppy is this game I call Mine, which is if I step in front of you, I want you to stop and sit and look at me. It's not on a verbal command. I don't want to always teach my dogs to listen to commands because a child may not say it or a guest may not know what to say. But if you step in front, just like if you and I were walking together and I all of a sudden stepped in front of you and blocked you, you'd go, whoa, what's going on? And you'd stop. Same thing with the dog. And I've had people call me to say, thank you so much. I dropped a bottle of medication. I dropped a jar of sauce on the floor and there was glass. And I stepped in front and the puppy sat and I was able to keep it safe. And that's what I want. That gives me chills.
That's wonderful. I think another reason at the other end of their lifespan, I had a black lab who I trained verbally and also with hand signals. And then when he got old and he lost his hearing, thank goodness he had those hand signals because that was the only way I could communicate after a while, you know, waving my hands and jumping up and down. It's hard to get a deaf dog's attention.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you've taught them early to check in with you, then it gets easier, and the hand signals are wonderful because it's the dog's primary language. So it's actually easier for them to learn this way. So it's quick, the dogs can pick it up quickly, and it lasts a lifetime. You know, you, like I said, you do 5 minutes now, you've got 10 years of much easier and clearer communication. It's so effective. It's great.
Well, starting with that brand new baby, when is the best time to bring that puppy home? So oftentimes people say, well, boy, I got this puppy at 6 weeks, or my breeder or the pet store doesn't want to give it to me until it's 12 weeks of age. What's your recommendation?
Well, my recommendation goes a little bit by the source. I don't like before 7 weeks. The only exception I would make to that is if the dog is in a neglectful or dangerous situation, but then I'd want to get that puppy around other dogs as fast as I could. I have raised 2 litters of German Shepherds myself just to sort of see what that was like, and I kept the puppies a little bit longer because I was doing a lot of socialization. Those puppies left me being crate trained, walking on leash, knowing the beginnings of sit down, come, riding in the car, being socialized. So if you have a breeder who's really active, or if you have a very tiny puppy who's at risk at a younger age, then keeping them a little longer can make sense. So it really depends on the involvement level of the breeder or rescue or foster home and what you're ready for. When they're a little bit older, they are often a little bit easier for people to integrate into their house. So I'd say be flexible, not before 7 weeks, unless danger or negligence is involved.
Wow, I think I want to get a dog from you, crate trained, house trained, and the rest of it. It's like house training can be such a hassle. Definitely want to chat about that one. Now, you're talking about...
So easy to do, and if breeders just understood how simple that was, people then bond to the dogs, the puppies, without stress. They're so proud of the puppies for what they know. It's so much easier for the dogs they love. I would love to help rescues and breeders learn how to do this with their puppies so that it's a smooth transition for everybody.
Okay, let's talk about it now. House training with my black lab. Oh my goodness, I thought I did everything I was supposed to. I kept it in a small little confined area, kept taking it outside, making sure that I was home, you know, when I first brought it home for like a week so I could really watch its little body language. It finally got to the point, Sarah, where we just weren't doing it. I had to literally tie a cord around my leg to the dog's collar. So when he woke up in the middle of the night, I woke up, and I knew one of them was going to get house trained, me or the dog, and I wasn't sure who. Finally, it was the dog. So what was I doing?
Well, number one, you remain an impressive woman. That's a lot of commitment, and you did what was necessary. Not all puppies read the same book, you know? I wish they did, too. When I got Pip, she hadn't read a single one of the six books I'd written before that. She really helped me hone the games in My Smart Puppy because she was looking at me saying, what you have, I don't care about. And I said, all right, I need some new games, and she helped me learn. So you have to vary it, and that's one of the things we offer over at our message board is a free community. So when people have dogs that do what they want or are confusing or aren't following the rules, you can come and ask. You get free advice from a team of professionals. Couldn't be easier, couldn't be better. So if you've got one of those puppies that is just making you crazy, please come by. We will give you loads of support.
What is the website?
My Smart Puppy.
Okay, mysmartpuppy.com. And it's free.
Yep.
And it's good information. Okay, so how do we get that puppy, say the typical situation, how do we get this puppy outside to go potty?
Ah, that is a matter of routine. At first, a clean house is completely up to you because this is a baby, and he probably won't have muscle control until he's about 16 weeks. So up to that point, it's going to be up to you. So you watch for any sniffing, circling, trying to leave the room, and you scoop them up, and you take them outside, and you praise them, and you give them a treat after they go out there, and pretty soon they'll make best efforts. And some puppies pick it up earlier, and some puppies, like your puppy, takes longer. But they can all get it.
And there are some of my clients. I live in an area where we have a large senior community. And a lot of these people have teeny dogs, and they bring the puppy home, and they get the puddle pads. And they go, well, it's going on the puddle pad, but I wanted to go outside. You know, is it okay to use both? And I usually tell them, well, my analogy is having that human child that you're trying to potty train, and they're wearing diapers. Like, okay, we're going to go out shopping, and when we're shopping, you can go potty in your pants because I don't have the time right now to find a bathroom and sit there for an hour waiting for you to go. But when we're home, tell mommy so you can go on the potty seat. Do you agree that it can be confusing for dogs?
I think if you try to do both things at once, it is absolutely confusing for the dog. And what I tell people is if you want your dog paper trained, then that's what you do. You paper train them, and you take them out for socialization and exercise after they've used their papers. That can be one of the rewards. If you try to do both at once, you are exactly right. They'll get confused. And a lot of dogs have a very strong preference for going outside. And if you give them that option, they will make every effort to go outside, and you'll end up with a housebroken puppy, whether you intended it or not. So if you want paper training, you stick to that exclusively until they really understand how to run back to the papers and go. And then you can start being a little bit more flexible.
I've never used it myself. I've heard of it. There is a litter box system for dogs that basically is like a big litter box for kitties, and it has pelleted paper. What's your opinion about that for somebody who doesn't want to have the little puddle pads out, for instance?
Well, it certainly can work for some dogs. What I find the biggest problem I hear about is the dogs play in it. They dig in it, they romp in it, they push it around. So many people I know start with the box with a pad in it. And then as the puppy gets older and a little bit more self-controlled, a little bit less likely to go onto a digging fest, then they start slowly adding the litter. It's really a preference issue. Both can work. Most people that I know simply go with the pads because they're lighter and easier to deal with and less expensive. I just go to most pharmacies and pick up what are called blue pads or chucks. They're exactly the same thing, and you can get them in boxes of 100 for much less money than PP pads.
And when you go out to the checkout stand, keep telling everyone around you, it's not for me, it's for my dog.
I have an extraordinarily large problem.
Well, you're talking about trying to read your puppy's body language, and I was just reading about some research that was done by a research company called the Kelton Research Company, and they're saying that people figure that about 40% of the time, the dog is better at reading their body language when they come home and they're upset, and they think they're pretty good at reading the dog's body language. What are some of the little body cues that we can get from our dogs that we should really cue in on when they're pups?
Oh, that's such a good question. One of the games we play often over on the community is people post behavior or pictures of their dogs, and we translate. And we translate video so that people can learn what dogs are doing. Pretty much in most cases, it's a direct translation, meaning if the dog is attempting to be smaller, lowered head, lowered tail, tucked body, they're feeling stressed. Just like if you saw a child who was sitting there, lowered head, you know, crunched shoulders, trying to be smaller. If you're trying to take up less space, you're stressed. When you try to take up more space, shoulders back, standing tall, or for a dog, ears up, tail up, you're feeling more confident. The dogs give us similar signals. If you don't want to talk to somebody, what do? You might look away from them and just turn your head. Don't want to talk to you? The dog will do the same thing. So those are the sorts of things I ask people to look for, especially around children. If as a child is approaching, you see the dog turn their head away, the dog just said to the child, I don't want to talk to you right now. And if the child doesn't understand that and the parent doesn't intervene, the dog can then try to make the point more strongly. So learning how to read those cues is vital. And when in doubt, ask yourself, if a human being just did that, what would it mean? And often you'll be pretty close.
That is just extremely common sense. It's a woman's point of view. Awesome.
Thank you. What I want to do is help people link the information and understanding they already have to their care of their dogs so that it can be really intuitive and common sense. That's exactly what we're trying to do. I want to infect people with this idea that this can be easy and it can be fun and you can all come out of it being glad you did it instead of feeling like, oh, I've got to go train the dog. All right, sit, good, sit, good, sit, good. And everybody hates it. No, people want to have fun. I want to have fun, so I'm trying to make that a part of everyone's life. More fun.
On the other extreme of fun, you were talking about a child coming up and a dog turning its head away and sometimes having to make its point. I've been amazed the number of times at the office when a brand new puppy is brought in for its first ever office call, and I go and I try to really take it slow and easy and make this first exposure to the white coat not be too terribly stressful. But some of these dogs are just stinkers. They're already growling and snapping and trying to bite. What do you do for that little stinker puppy?
Oh, well, thank you. One of the big games that we go over in My Smart Puppy is calm equals release, because pets are handled, and I consider handling to be absolutely a vital part of being a decent pet. And that's something that breeders and fosters should be doing. It's something we do. We do group projects every month to 6 weeks. I put up a little video clip often of handling, and everyone gets to try, and when they pass, we list them, and it's all about, you know, handling the face, handling the mouth, handling the paws. For just this reason, one of the reasons I find this is happening now more than ever is it can be an unintentional result of quote-unquote all-positive training, which is a big step forward from some of the other training we used to do. But what can happen is that the dogs are taught you only have to do what you feel like doing. I will wait. You only have to do what you feel like doing. And then you get these puppies at 5, 6, 7 months who have never had to do anything they didn't feel like doing, and you're a vet and you've got to take a temperature or do something, and they have a full-blown hissy. So combining positively focused, fun training with daily handling is how, in my opinion, you create a wonderful, happy, relaxed pet. Because I don't want to have to fight with my dog to help them if they ever get hurt. I don't want to have to fight with them to do normal grooming, and I don't want to have you fight with the dog to get normal health care. I don't want them to be that frightened. I don't think they should be that frightened, and you shouldn't have to work that hard simply to look in a dog's mouth or take a temperature.
I definitely want one of your dogs. So you have a puppy that is teething, and we know that just like a human child teething, you know, they want to chew on things, their gums hurt a little bit, they might be a little bit on the fussy side. So people say, well, you know, it's just teething, and that's why it's chewing on me. What's your response, and what do you do for that puppy that's nipping at you and biting at you and playing?
Well, luckily there are tons of options. And one of the things I do, it's really simple and it works well. When they're stressed, they want to be with you. When they want to be with you and their mouth hurts, they start to mouth, and then you get frustrated, and then they get cranky, and around we go, and nobody's having any fun. So you can get a good chew item. It can be a Kong. It can be a compressed rawhide. It can be whatever your vet recommends. I really think you should talk to your vet about what they consider to be a safe chew item. But you roll it in your hands, blow on it, get your scent on it, and then give it to the puppy. And then the puppy gets that reassurance of your scent without, you know, bloodletting, which is not the fun part of having the puppy. But when they're teething, I'm big into giving them things to work on. And if I need to, if they get too cranky, I just crate them for a few minutes and let them sleep. People often don't realize just how much sleep puppies need from about 7-8 weeks to like 7 months. They're growing, it's as if an infant went in 7 months from birth to adolescence. You would need sleep. These dogs often need 18-plus hours a day of sleep, and if there are children in the house or if they're out and about, they just get cranky. And if you give them more sleep and some more nap times, they are a lot less all over the place.
A little time out for pups never hurt. So we need to take a little time out right now. We're chatting right now with Sarah Wilson with MySmartPuppy.com.
Thank you,
Great book, My Smart Puppy, and how to make training fun. So now everyone who's listened, you're supposed to be trained to sit, listen to this commercial. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Hey, love to read, but just never seem to have enough time to sit in one place long enough? For all of us on-the-go people, Audible has the answer. Best-selling audiobooks for your iPod or MP3 player. For Pet Life Radio listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 14-day trial to give you a chance to check out their service. Choose from hundreds of today's bestsellers, including awesome pet books such as Bad Dogs Have More Fun by Marley and the author John Grogan, Love That Cat by Ingrid Newkirk, It's Okay to Miss the Bed on the First Jump, and Other Life Lessons I Learned from Dogs by Seinfeld's John O'Hurley, and many, many more. To download your free audiobook today, go to audiblepodcast.com/pet doctor. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/pet doctor for your free audiobook.
It's time for school for you and your friends, your furry best friends. Train your dog the fun and easy way with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Teacher's Pet host Pia Silvani teaches you step by step how to train your dog the fun and easy way. You get 8 30-minute live audio training sessions, complete transcripts of each session, plus a basic training manual to get you and your dog off to a great start. Training begins the moment you bring your dog home. Teacher's Pet Sessions offers positive reinforcement training to shape your dog's behavior and encourages upbeat, enthusiastic responses to ensure that your dog will enjoy learning. Teacher's Pet Sessions dog training is fun at both ends of the leash. So listen, learn, and laugh with your dog with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Get your copy of Teacher's Pet Sessions Volume 1 today. To order, go to teacherspetsessions.com.
Hi, this is Pia Silvani, your host. Bring your dog, tug toy, and treats, and get ready to have some fun.
teacherspetsessions.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Sarah, I love your common sense. I think it just really gets down to common sense over and over again.
Thank you.
Do you do if you have that, instead of the aggressive puppy, maybe the one that seems rather, I'm independent, I'm aloof,
yeah, I'm independent.
I'll do it on my own.
Well, you're going to love, when we get our new content up, you're going to love it. Now, not all the content's going to be free, because I'm actually going to try to monetize, but a lot will be free, and the forums will be free, and will still be a wonderful source for people, whoever comes. But I'm going to have things on what to do with the independent puppy, what to do with the reactive puppy, what to do with the shy, sensitive puppy. And I have a new sort of puppy that I identified 2 years ago or so that I call the deficit puppy, which is a genetically sound puppy who's had a very limited socialization period, and how to bring those dogs through it, because I've brought two of my own dogs through it. So I have stuff for the deficit dog too. So I really want to be a resource for keeping puppies and dogs in their home, making people successful.
The deficit dog sounds a little bit like a shelter dog. So many times people come in, they've just adopted a dog, and one of the first things out of their mouth is, oh, it was an abused dog.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think that's just a fearful dog. When you go to a shelter, and I know we're talking about puppies, and sometimes you can find puppies at the shelter, but when you go to the shelter, what should you do? What kind of homework should you do to say, all right, this is maybe the pup that's not the best for me, or this is one that I can work with?
Oh, I love your questions. First of all, there are no perfect dogs, just like there are no perfect people, but there are people who are perfect for us, and there are dogs who are perfect for us. And you need to really keep your brain engaged and realize that every dog there is equally needing adoption. So if you turn one down, the one you take equally needs adoption. You don't have to feel guilty. There are, unfortunately, lots and lots of dogs. There are three things I basically look for families. First, I want a dog or a puppy who really likes people, specifically children. If you bring the dog into the visit room, or you're sitting in front of the cage and people say, well, he's just distracted. Well, you know what? The smell on the floor should not be more interesting than you. You should be the most interesting thing there to the dog. And if it isn't, then that probably isn't a good fit for a novice home or for a family. Because dogs who love people are more likely to be tolerant of people, just like the rest of us. We tolerate what we love. And then I want to know how they respond to any sort of frustration. So if they're behind the gate, what are they doing? Are they jumping up and down, leaping, hitting it? Are they sitting there quietly wagging their tail? Are they pressed up against the fence saying, please pet me? Or are they back of the kennel? I'm going to read all those things and say, okay, how is this going to fit to my life? And if I could remember the third one, I would tell you. But those are two good ones to go on.
Those are excellent ones to go with. So you bring home your puppy, either from the breeder, the pet store, the shelter, whatever, and all of a sudden you go to love it, and it flips on its back, and it pees on itself. And this is a habit that even older dogs tend to do, and people just get so frustrated. I have my take on it. What's your take on it?
Well, in most cases, it is a dog being ultra polite. And so when we get frustrated with the dog thinks, oh, I wasn't polite enough. I'll be more polite next time. And they fountainhead even more. So one of the things, my dog Pip did this for a long time when she greeted strangers. Sometimes she'd be friendly and sometimes she'd flip on her back. And the minute I saw her flip on her back, I would say, don't touch her. Don't touch her. She's going to blow. And I would never know exactly what was going to set her off. But if they would just wait for a second for her to get up, then we wouldn't have that problem. So one of the things is when you see looking stressed, their ears are back, they're sidling up, just ask the people to ignore the dog for a second. You can also have some treats and toss some treats off to the side to get the dog to move away and get them focused on food, because they can't be nervous and enjoying their treat at the same time, quite at the same level. And you can teach them other things to do. So if they're coming up and you've taught them a really fun, positive sit, so that sit is one of those words that makes them feel good, then you can also help them through it. What you never want to do with a dog that submissively urinates, which is what this is scold them or yell, because that will simply make them more submissive next time. It's one of those sort of culture miscommunications that we can have, and the dog means no harm at all. It is not a housebreaking problem. It has nothing to do with housebreaking.
Okay, speaking of housebreaking, certain dogs just seem to be incorrigible. Male, in particular, walking through the house and all of a sudden lifting their leg and peeing on furniture. And they'll even do it after they're neutered. So I'll tell people, well, it's a male thing, marking their territory. But I've seen even female dogs pee on things. So is this housebreaking or is this a behavioral issue?
Usually it's a behavioral issue. The majority of cases are dogs who are confused in one way or another. I've seen some rescue dogs do it, that once they feel secure in the home, they stop. But most often I see it as dogs who are confused about the relationship between the person and the dog. So we do something called grounding. Other people call nothing in life is free. And we start to shift the relationship so the dog will feel more secure and less likely to do this. There is a product, and I make no money off of this. I just happen to think it's a great product, and it's called a pee pocket, literally pee-pocket. And it's a little belt that fits on your male dog, and it actually stays in place.
It's a cod piece for dogs.
It's a cod piece for dogs. It stays in place. And then at least you can enjoy your dog without being stressed about it. Because if every time your dog is out, you're stressed and you're upset, then that adds the dog stress and the whole thing can snowball. So, pee pockets. If anybody wants the link, they can come by My Smart Puppy and ask on the community, and I'm more than happy to help them. But prevention with a cod piece or a cummerbund and then reorganizing the relationship usually does the trick. And also proper cleanup. You may need a black light that will show you where the urine is and brace yourselves because you may be shocked and appalled.
With the small dogs going, well, it just pees a little bit. And so it's like being a little pregnant. You either are house trained or you're not house trained. So don't let that little one get away with it.
I know, but it's so hard. Number one, it is. They're so darn cute when they're little. But I tell people it's something like, you know, potty training your toddler in a football stadium. You know, a toy dog is so much smaller in proportion to the house that the space is so much larger that it's harder for them to feel inhibited. But they absolutely can learn to be housebroken. You just need to be persistent about it.
I like that analogy of, you know, being in the football stadium. When I had my black lab, and whenever he got sick, and it was just a tummy upset, and it was going to be a problem from one end or the other, he always went into the front room, a room that I tried to keep pristinely clean, and that's where he'd always have the accidents. And then I finally found, from talking to a behaviorist, because the dog didn't see me going in there a lot, he thought, it's not part of your nest, so it's not part of mine.
That's
so
right.
If I have to have an accident, that's a good place to do it.
That's right. You're not using it. That's very common. The formal dining room, behind your formal couch, in the living room, the basement. So spending some quality time in those locations can really help. We encourage people to clean it properly with an odor neutralizer made for removing pet stains and odor, and then put them on leash and spend time there. Do downstays, read your newspaper, make it a part of the house, and the dog will go, oh, okay, thought you weren't using it.
All of the house is your house. Okay, now I get. Okay.
You hadn't explained it before. It made perfect sense to the dog.
Make
it's sort of like going in an abandoned building. I mean, if you had to go someplace, you might choose the abandoned building.
Well, it makes sense when we teach them commands, you know, the come, sit, stays. I know there's various types of commands. Most of us would think of, you know, a verbal command, but you said you'd also want to use hand signals. Are there other types of commands, too, that you'll use with a dog when it's a puppy?
Absolutely, and it's the ones we all use with each other. Space, spatial commands. Me stepping in front, that's a spatial command. You have sound, which is our voice, whistles, clapping, clickers, signals, the hand signals you were talking about, absolutely sensation. I do a lot of touching with the puppies and teaching them how to respond to sit and down and various things to touch because these animals are our pets and they need to be handled on a daily basis and be used to human handling. So those are all different ways that we can command and communicate with our dogs, and it can work beautifully. We do it with each other all the time. If, you know, if I point to something, you're going to look, and that's a signal. And if I block you, you're going to stop, or you're going to cut around me. That's a signal. We all use them. So using them with awareness simply makes things easier with the dogs.
With puppies growing physically and mentally so quickly during that first year, are there different types of commands that you should do when they're teeny babies versus when they're the toddler versus the teenager dog?
Have them on your lap when you're watching TV and handle their paws and handle their mouth and look in their ears and just make that a normal part of this puppy's day and a pleasurable part of the day. And if you get that in place when they're 10 pounds, you will be happy you did when they're 70, because it is much harder to deal with when they get older. So with the handling, I really like what I call the space games. They're all outlined in My Smart Puppy. I really love those early because it teaches the dog how to be attentive to your movement, and it's their job to pay attention. And once they learn that, boy, you can put anything on top of that brain. So handling and space games, great at that age. And then as they get older and you're doing more off-leash work in the park and all that, then the verbal and the sound cues come in much more strongly. So you can absolutely do it progressively. The book is laid out progressively so that you can, you know, move along with your puppy.
Is there ever an instance where a smack on the butt is appropriate?
Not that I know. I don't go down that road because I think we've got much better tools at our disposal than physical violence. And also, the dogs are much better equipped to deal with us physically. If we want to start picking a fight with a dog, I don't care if you have a Chihuahua or a Great Dane, you're going to lose. So we have a bigger brain. We're going to win through brain power, not through brute power. I'm not into smacking, shaking, yelling, pinning. Not necessary. Not any more necessary with a puppy than with a friend.
Is there special equipment you're talking about, not pinning? I know a lot of people think, oh, I have a big dog. I'm going to need a pinch collar. I'm going to need a choke chain.
Well, what I remind people is that your dog feels a fly land on his ear and will flick it off. So he feels everything. He just doesn't understand what he's supposed to do. So we break things down into very small pieces, and we start teaching them from babyhood that if there's any pressure on the lead, they should look back at us. And, oh, what a good puppy, you're so smart. They come back and they get a cookie right by our leg, and off we go again. So pretty soon what will happen is if the dog ever does hit the end of the leash, they automatically turn around and run back, and that makes things easier. I also teach puppies from the very beginning that if you see a distraction, you should look back at me. Not on a verbal cue, I let the distraction tell the puppy to check with me. And once that's happening, you're walking down the street, your dog sees the squirrel, and the squirrel causes the dog to look at you. Seeing the squirrel, the dog looks up and goes, what are we going to do? And I go, oh, you're such a good puppy, good dog, wait. Gives me a chance to input some information. So these games build behaviors that make them much more manageable. There is no reason why we have to use extreme force on a dog. The only time that has to, quote-unquote, happen is when we haven't taught them what the gentle pressures mean. But they feel the gentle pressures. It's just never been significant to them. So we can help them with that.
And you train as a puppy, and you continue training. I think that's what so many people, I get so disheartened for them, because they were so good when the puppy was little. They went to their puppy classes and they did all the training, and then now the dog is 3 years of age and just seems to have lost its training. I said, well, if you went to kindergarten and then you never went on to college, you probably are going to lose some of what you learned when you were a baby. So you need to continue learning. We need to continue working with our dogs, I believe, on a daily basis.
Absolutely. But you know what? That's a failure in my profession, because if people were doing things and could be inspired to do it, they'd never stop. If it was fun, they'd never stop. And that's why I did My Smart Puppy the way I did. And that's why we have the site the way we have it, because if it is fun to do, people never stop doing it. They stop because it's a drag, and that's our fault. I think the last time the numbers were run, something like 19% of American dogs had had formal training. People know about it. They just don't want it. They don't want what we've been offering. I went back, I got my master's, I got the message, and I redid what I did so that it would be more fun and more useful for the people and the dogs, and that's what we're all about. We want people to be successful. But if they're not practicing, that's not their fault. That's our fault. We need to give them something more fun and more appealing to do.
Well, it sounds like going to mysmartpuppy.com and the community is a great way for these people to find that it's fun, it's easy, they'll continue on, and it doesn't have to be expensive.
Absolutely, it doesn't have to be expensive, and it's not a one-size-fits-all. The best method in the world for training dogs is the one someone will use. It doesn't matter how great I think something is. If something somebody won't do it, it doesn't matter. So we teach lots of methods, lots of approaches. We want you to be successful. So whatever that takes, that's what we do.
That's like having the expensive exercise machine in your garage. Gee, it's really
exactly.
good, but it's not doing me any good. I'm not on it.
That's exactly right. It would be more fun to go for a walk with a friend, right? Because it's really small and it's fun. So.
Go for a walk with your dog.
Exactly.
Exactly. Well, we've been talking right now with Sarah Wilson. Sarah, this has been awesome. And when I get my next dog, for sure, I'm going to be going to mysmartpuppy.com and reviewing my book, My Smart Puppy, Fun, Effective, and Easy Puppy Training. You've been listening to Dr. Bernadine Cruz on Pet Life Radio, The Pet Doctor. Thank you very much for listening. And Sarah, thank you very much for being with us today.
It was a delight. Thank you so much, Dr. Cruz.
My pleasure. Take care, everyone, and listen again next week when we have more information on how you can be the best possible pet owner. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.